Good morning. On today's programme, 9 years after Brexit, is the UK ready to cultivate a closer relationship with the European Union? And restarting uranium mining operations to fuel American demands for nuclear power. But first we go to Mexico. Earlier this week, a young Mexican social media influencer was shot dead during a TikTok live stream, an incident that sent shockwaves through the country that faces high levels of gender-based violence. The death of 23-year-old Valeria Marquez is being investigated as a femicide, according to a state prosecutor. In the first 2 months of this year, federal authorities have documented more than 100 such cases of femicide, as Mariana Martinez Barba reports.
Earlier this week, Valeria Marquez, a 23-year-old social media beauty influencer, was shot to death during a live stream from a salon in the western Mexican state of Jalisco. State authorities said the attack occurred around 6:30 p.m. in the evening, as Marquez was doing a live stream when an unidentified male entered the premises and began opening fire. Clips from the live stream show Marquez opening a delivery bag from Starbucks to followers on Instagram and holding a stuffed animal pig to the camera. Moments later, the influencer dressed in a pink bodysuit and white pants looks off into the distance before she's shot dead. Jalisco state authorities said they are investigating the crime as a suspected femicide, a gender-based killing of a woman or girl that is all too common in Mexico. According to the Mexico Institute at the Wilson Center, around 10 women are killed each day in the country. In the first 2 months of 2025, federal authorities documented more than 100 femicides. In Mexico, an enduring legacy of machismo, or patriarchal culture, gave way to a large wave of femicidios, or femicides, in the early 90s. Though Mexico elected its first female president last year, Claudia Sheinbaum, there remains little progress on women's issues. In her morning press conference this week, President Sheinbaum expressed her solidarity with Marquez's family. She also said federal and state authorities are working closely to establish a motive for the tragedy. In Jalisco, where Marquez was murdered, violence is rampant as the state is a stronghold for the new generation Jalisco cartel. Since 2010, the cartel has operated in the western Mexican state, gradually gaining dominance in the drug sales and trafficking market, according to ACLED, a nonprofit organization specializing in disaggregated conflict data. Prior to Marquez's murder, Yesenia Lara Gutierrez, a mayoral candidate in the coastal state of Veracruz, was killed. Another politician in Jalisco was also murdered hours after Marquez. These murders are only the latest in a perpetual violence that rages across the country. Jalisco, for example, ranks as one of Mexico's most dangerous states. Here, the new generation Jalisco cartel has predominantly engaged in violence that targets civilians. Mexican security expert David Saucedo said state authorities shared an initial report that Marquez was linked to a leader from the new generation Jalisco cartel, but quickly retracted. In a second report, they said they had not established a clear connection with the cartel or a suspect. However, the retracted statement has created a ripple of speculation and rumors across social media. For Saucedo, this results in a re-victimization of Marquez, even though authorities are advised to be cautious of placing any blame on femicide victims. Moreover, Saucedo said there is documentation of Marquez sharing in previous live streams and WhatsApp messages that she received threats and feared for her life. Whether this was due to interpersonal relationships or ties to organized crime remains unclear. Saucedo said social media can often generate incomplete narratives. As in Marquez's case, there are still many unanswered questions. Marquez's murder has sent shockwaves throughout the country, with vocal cries demanding for justice. The influencer, who had hundreds of thousands of followers, regularly documented her daily makeup looks and luxurious lifestyle. In the last few days, her comment section on Instagram has been flooded with messages. One user wrote, "My Val, I had the opportunity to meet her in person. She was a person with such a beautiful energy. I'm still in shock. I can't believe I will never see her live streams again." Others commented with white doves. a symbol of peace for Marquez and her family. In Mexico, this is Mariana Martinez Barba for World Report.
To the UK next, it's almost 9 years since the Brexit vote, and it continues to overshadow British politics and relations between London and Brussels. Tomorrow, the President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, will lead a delegation of EU officials to London for a summit with the UK. A reset in relations with the EU could provide economic opportunities, but getting closer to Brussels could also stoke up stronger domestic political challenges for Prime Minister Keir Starmer. As Russell Padmore reports now from London.
Monday's meeting will be a test of the Labour government here and its leader, Keir Starmer, to balance big international issues against domestic political challenges. The British government recently agreed a trade deal with the United States, following President Donald Trump's global campaign of levying tariffs on trade. The EU-UK summit is likely to see both sides agree to a pact on defence, notably aimed at helping Ukraine in its war with Russia, but also reacting to pressure from Donald Trump for Europe to increase military spending for NATO. British arms manufacturers would have greater participation in European defence projects. Domestically, the UK Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, is being squeezed between pro-European politicians in his own Labour Party, who want closer ties with the EU, and the anti-immigration reform UK Party, led by the colourful and outspoken character Nigel Farage. That hard-right party gained significant political ground earlier this month in elections to local councils, winning more than 670 seats. Reform is becoming a major force in British politics, tapping into concerns about hundreds of thousands of migrants arriving illegally in the UK and worries about sluggish economic growth. Better ties with the European Union would benefit British businesses and the economy, but moving closer to Brussels is a political minefield for the government. Ministers may take heart from a recent poll commissioned by the pro-EU campaign Best for Britain, which found that 69% of respondents favoured closer ties with Brussels, while 21% opposed alignment on animal and plant standards. That thorny subject has caused problems for Northern Ireland, which following Brexit is part of the EU's free trade area. Maintaining the same food standards as the EU could eliminate the cost of checks on British food products exported across the Channel. Ahead of Monday's summit, some European nations have put pressure on negotiators to make sure they address fishing rights. In 2020, the EU's share of fish quotas in British waters was reduced by 25% over a transition period that runs out next year. Some countries want Brussels to secure access to fish in UK territorial waters for a longer term. Countries in the bloc have raised concerns about a work and study exchange scheme for people aged between 18 and 30. EU nations fear Britain could limit it to a year and possibly impose quotas. European diplomats have also criticised the UK for not exempting EU students from rates on foreign tuition. British students pay about €11,000 a year, while their foreign counterparts can pay up to €45,000, obviously significantly more. But any change to that is a red line for the UK government, which is struggling to cope with tough, self-imposed limits on spending. Diplomats on both sides will spend Sunday trying to smooth the way for an agreement ahead of the EU-UK summit on Monday. A British parliamentary committee on business and trade recently issued a report setting out 20 policy areas the government should pursue, which included reduced checks on exports of food and drink, alongside simpler customs procedures. According to the Labour chairman of the committee, Liam Byrne, if the UK doesn't reset its relationship with the EU, it will miss its best chance to accelerate growth and security. The Prime Minister Keir Starmer and his government colleagues face a quandary. Spending more on defence and cooperating with European military projects will stretch the budget, which is already under strain. But in return for military cooperation and other concessions, the European Union may smooth the way for trade, which would boost the economy here. However, a reset of relations with Brussels would give the Eurosceptic Reform UK Party more ammunition to attack the Labour government. criticism that could strengthen its growing popularity with voters. The British Prime Minister Keir Starmer recognises an economic opportunity from a reset of relations with the European Union, but getting closer to Brussels is likely to stoke up stronger domestic political challenges. This is Russell Padmore for World Report in London.
Finally, to the United States, where President Donald Trump has promised to unleash America's energy potential during his second term in office. While a large focus will be on increasing American oil and natural gas production, the administration is also keen on nuclear energy. But the fuel for nuclear power, uranium, is largely produced outside the US, and plans are now underway to restart more domestic mining operations. H.J. Mai has this report.
The idea of a nuclear resurgence in the United States has been proposed for years. What's new is a bipartisan support in Washington and a greater push for homegrown energy production. Innovations like small modular reactors, or SMRs, could also make nuclear power more cost competitive. And then there's of course the fact that nuclear energy is considered a climate-friendly, low-carbon source of power. But no matter the reason for the renewed interest in the technology, to power it, it requires uranium. America's nuclear power plants currently import 99% of the uranium used to create energy. That's a drastic difference compared to 45 years ago, when the US was the number one uranium producer in the world. But things are slowly starting to change. Last year, US uranium production reached a 6-year high, and plans to restart more domestic mining operations are underway. One mine that began producing uranium ore is the Pinyon Plain Mine in northern Arizona. The mine is located on federal land, less than 10 miles from the Grand Canyon. The 14-acre facility is nestled inside a national forest and surrounded by trees. Energy Fuels, the company which owns the mine, says the current political climate, combined with a strong uranium price, make mining uranium in the US economically viable. The workers at Pinyon Plain work in 12-hour shifts at a depth of roughly 1,500 feet. It's a conventional mining operation, meaning that workers and geologists identify where uranium ore deposits are located. Then they use explosives to break the rock before removing it and bringing it to the surface. According to Assistant Mine Superintendent Matt Germanson, it will take anywhere between 3 to 5 years, maybe 7, before the uranium ore deposit in this location is depleted. But the start of production near the Grand Canyon has also reignited concerns among area residents, environmental activists, and native tribes. The history of uranium mining in the US has included some dark chapters. After World War II, the US and other nations sought to harvest the power of the atom for peaceful civil purposes. The atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki resulted in immense devastation, killing hundreds of thousands of people and causing long-term health problems for survivors. After those deadly consequences, nuclear fission was treated with fear and distrust. The new goal was to use fission to produce unlimited energy to power the future. This led to a uranium gold rush starting in the 1950s throughout many southwestern US states. Hundreds of small uranium mines sprung up all over the place. The US government even published a do-it-yourself guidebook for uranium mining. In it, the government assured prospectors that the pursuit would be not dangerous in any way. With virtually no real safety regulations in place, workers ended up paying a high price. Exposure to high levels of radon, a radioactive gas that has been linked to lung cancer, and dust from the mines had a detrimental impact on the health of workers and their families. In particular, workers from the Navajo Nation suffered in those conditions, resulting in an unknown number of deaths and other long-term health issues. During the peak of uranium mining in the US, over 1,000 mines were located on tribal land. To this day, Navajo members say they feel the impact of this legacy, as uranium contamination has been found in dozens of water sources. In Tuba City, Arizona, and other tribal communities, organizers have started to protest Energy Fuels' uranium mining operations. While the Pinyon Plain Mine is not located on tribal land, it is near a sacred site, and its proximity to the Grand Canyon causes concern. Leona Morgan is an indigenous community organizer who has been fighting against the resurgence of uranium mining since 2007. She says the dangers for human health and the environment outweigh any benefits. Morgan also cautions that some of the uranium from the mine will likely end up in military weapons. Energy Fields pushes back against those concerns. It says safety regulations have dramatically improved and independent studies have proven that radiation levels near the mine are below official guidelines. For now, the government seems eager to expand U.S. uranium mining. At a recent panel discussion in Washington, D.C., Republican Congressman Randy Weber, who is a ranking member on the Subcommittee for Energy, called nuclear power the cleanest source there is. As such, he also wants to boost domestic uranium production. While accidents like Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, or Fukushima show the dangers of the technology, public support for nuclear energy in the U.S. has grown in recent years. Economic forces and regulatory frameworks will ultimately decide whether a nuclear renaissance is imminent. For World Report, this is H.J. Mine, Flagstaff, Arizona.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. The program was edited by Margaret Curley. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or on all podcast platforms. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.